Welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour. It's from True Romance Magazine called Wife for Hire. Here's the story. The offices of Ben Anders, CPA, appeared as ordinary and undistinguished as the man himself, despite their placement on a patio-lined street in the heart of town. Eden Beach was far enough from Miami to escape the crowds and gridlock traffic, but big enough to warrant several 24-hour superstores and a mall. When I'd entered the one-story red brick building, I was greeted by a tall, broad-shouldered man. A little tingle zinged through me. James Bamer, Mr. Anders' junior partner, wasn't the person I was here to see about engaging my services. I might be middle-aged, divorced, and a little gray around the edges, but I wasn't completely immune to a good-looking man who apparently spent lots of time at the gym. "He'll see you now," Mr. Muscles said as he motioned toward a closed door with Mr. Anders' name emblazoned across it in gold lettering. "Just go on in." Grabbing my purse and the leather tote I'd brought, I tottered across the thick carpet wearing the only pair of high heels I owned. I usually worked barefoot, or if I had to wear shoes, they were flat and comfy. This Monday morning, I was in professional businesswoman mode, full makeup, navy power suit, and the wobbly heels. Reaching the door, I gripped the brass knob, gave it a sharp twist, and pushed it open to enter Ben Anders' inner sanctum. "Miss Klein," he greeted me, standing behind a massive mahogany desk. "Come in and have a seat. Can I get you a cup of coffee?" He made his way toward a credenza which held a stainless steel coffee maker and half a dozen sturdy white mugs lined up like soldiers at attention. "Yes, please." He filled a mug with the steaming liquid. "How many sugars?" he asked, digging into a basket of rainbow-colored packets. "None, actually. I drink it black." "Oh?" He dropped the packets he'd selected back into the basket. "I thought all you women liked it full of cream and sugar." "All of us women?" With an attitude like that, no wonder his poor wife needed help. I scrutinized him from behind and noted his wrinkled suit, the wear on the heels of his shoes, and the fact that his graying hair appeared to be at least a few weeks overdue for a good haircut. Poor man, his wife's so busy she doesn't even have time to look after him. I took the mug of coffee from him and saw the fatigued look in his eyes as he returned to the leather executive chair behind his desk. "How can I help you, Mr. Anders?" I asked. "Or rather, how can I help Mrs. Anders?" "Mrs. Anders?" A puzzled look crossed his face. "There isn't a Mrs. Anders, and that's exactly why I called your company. I'd like you to be my wife until tax season is over." "I beg your pardon?" "Hire a wife" was the brainchild of my best friend, Cheryl. After my husband of nearly 30 years dumped me for a newer, blonder model, I had to come up with a way to support myself. I'd gone to college, but my unused degree was as old as my former marriage. The job market for a 50-year-old home economics teacher with no experience was mighty bleak. What I did have experience in was running a household. For almost three decades, I'd kept my husband on schedule. I made sure he saw the dentist twice annually, visited his primary care physician every October for his yearly physical, and scheduled his car for maintenance every 3 months or 3,000 miles, whichever came first. Our two children never missed a little league practice or dance lesson. I kept our home clean, put a hot meal on the table every night, and no one sock drawer was ever empty. I felt compelled to live up to the perfect image that June Cleaver had portrayed on television. After all, I'd grown up in the era of the mostly stay-at-home wife and mother. I'd figured that's what I should do, too. What I never counted on was being thrust into the workplace at the same time I became eligible for AARP membership. As Cheryl and I sat around my kitchen table one Saturday morning, brainstorming home business deals, or ideas that is, the idea of being a personal services provider for women emerged. Do you remember that time my mother came for a visit while Bruce was out of town on business? She asked. Uh-huh, I nodded, wondering where on earth she was headed. Every day when I came home from work, she had dinner waiting at the table. She did the housework, the laundry, and even sorted the mail. She bought groceries and took phone messages for me. She did everything for me that I did for Bruce, she explained. I realized this is what it's like to have a wife. And I still wasn't following her train of thought. You could be a wife for working women, don't you see? You could do all the things you're really good at, only now you'll get paid to do it. But I don't want to clean someone else's toilets and mop their floors. Forget the housework. That's what a maid service is for. She waved her hand as if to shoo away even the thought of picking up a dust rag. I'm talking about things like personal shopping, party planning, being at someone's house when the plumber comes, all the things women have to take off work for or do after a long day, when they'd rather just go home, prop their feet up, and relax in front of the television. Maybe she was on to something, but would women really pay me to sit at the car dealership for an hour while their oil got changed and the tires rotated? I don't know, I said. Certainly, I've never thought of paying someone to do those things. That's because you didn't need to. You've always been at home and able to do it yourself. Cheryl drained her coffee mug and reached for the thermal carafe to pour herself a refill. I, on the other hand, would love to pay someone to handle all the mundane things that eat up my free time. Cheryl was the office manager for a large law firm that employed at least 24 women, some of whom just might be interested in having a personal services provider. Together, we created a business plan, set up an office in the spare bedroom, and advertised in the local paper. Then I waited for my clients. The jobs trickled in at first, but soon I had a steady flow of business. My reputation was building by word of mouth, as well as through my monthly newspaper ads. My biggest job and biggest challenge came in the form of one Mrs. Doug Laurel Campbell IV, whose husband was a senior partner in the firm where Cheryl worked. Once I got over her husband's position and the big number behind his name, I learned that Ellen Campbell was just a down-to-earth wife and mother with her hands full. It was their turn to host the firm's annual Labor Day family picnic, and she needed help. Cheryl had recommended me, and while dealing with caterers and florists was outside the norm for my business, I swallowed hard and tackled the job head-on. The picnic was a huge success, and I was garnered with several more business referrals. That's where Ben Anders, Ellen's brother, came in. He had dyed all his underwear pink in the washing machine, flooded the kitchen floor with suds after filling the dishwasher with regular dish liquid, and had his telephone disconnected because he forgot to pay the bill. Ellen called her brother to inform him he needed help, and she recommended me. I'd like to hire you to be my wife until tax season is over. If anyone had asked me to bet money on whether he and Ellen were related, I'd have lost. Where Ellen was a vibrant green-eyed redhead with a few freckles splattered across her nose, Ben had an olive complexion and nearly black hair with gray at the temples. His blue-gray eyes were shadowed behind a pair of wire-framed glasses. He had an average build and close to 6 feet tall. He towered over my 5'3" frame. The whole package made him attractive in an absent-minded professor sort of way, with a tailored suit, a good haircut, and a pair of stylish glasses. He'd be a knockout. I quickly flung those thoughts from my head and returned my attention to the business at hand. But I can't be your wife. I mean, I can't work for you. You're a man. I'd never worked for a man before. Most men already had real wives to do the tasks I performed. So do you routinely practice sexual discrimination in your business, Ms. Klein? His gaze met mine across the desk and his brows lifted. No, yes, I stammered. Well, not really. Either you do or you don't. It's just, my voice faded as I remembered the last time I was a man's wife. He dumped me and left me in the lurch. I didn't want to risk repeating the process, even if it was just a business arrangement, complete with a binding contract. Ellen said you were the best wife she's ever had. Not that she's had that many wives. She said you could help me get my house organized, find a good dry cleaner, take my car to the shop for routine maintenance, and hang around so I could get a plumber to repair my leaky kitchen sink. I nodded as he rattled off a to-do list that would keep me busy for several weeks. I'm just not sure. That's what you do, isn't it? Provide wifely services for money? That's what I did, all right, but the way he said it made me sound like a hooker. I prefer to call myself a personal services provider. I corrected and sat up straight in the hard leather chair across the desk from him. I didn't care if Ben Anders was the King of England. He wasn't going to belittle me or my business. He pulled off his glasses and set them carefully on his desk. I don't care what you call yourself, Ms. Klein. Tax season runs until April 15th, and I generally work 15 hours a day, 6 days a week. I need help, please. That was obvious, and Ellen had said his life was a disaster. She just neglected to mention he wasn't married, so what if I'd never had a male client before? There was a first time for everything. Why, my whole business was a giant first. His money would spend like anyone else's, and if my guess was correct, a busy and highly disorganized man would need lots more help than a busy and disorganized woman. This job could be very good for my bottom line. I reached into my leather tote and withdrew a folder containing a brochure and standard contract. I pushed it across the desk to him, wondering if I had dollar signs shining in my eyes. The brochure lists the services I provide. If you don't see something listed, feel free to ask. I believe you'll find the contract is quite straightforward. I charge by the hour, give a discount if you require my services for an entire 8-hour day, and I bill twice a month on the 1st and the 15th. I also require a small retainer that is deducted from your final bill. Once you've outlined your needs, I'll present you a plan of action and schedule, and if you are satisfied, we'll sign a final contract. Any questions? When can you start? He asked without pause. But you haven't even looked at the materials. For all you know, I charge $1,000 an hour. Ms. Klein, if you're half as good as my sister claims you are, you'll be worth whatever amount you charge. I already have a partial list of things I need done. He pulled a sheet of paper from under his desk calendar and gave it a quick glance before holding it out toward me. Work me into your schedule when you can. Just please help me get my life back in order. I'm not sure whether it was my desire to prove myself worth to a member of the male species or whether I simply felt extremely sorry for this dreadfully disorganized man, but by the time I walked out of his office, I had a tentative list of tasks along with a signed contract and a check in my wallet. Ben Anders was serious about getting his life in order. Can you meet me at Rocky's tomorrow evening at 6? He asked, consulting the calendar on his desk. Rocky's was a legendary sandwich shop located nearby. Anyone who was anybody ate there, but my services didn't include dinner with my clients. I'd rather not mix business with pleasure, Mr. Anders. I folded my hands primly in my lap, my lips narrowing into a thin line. Trust me, dining with you tomorrow has nothing to do with pleasure. I sucked in a deep breath and kept my hands tightly clasped. If I didn't need his business and the likely referrals it would generate, I'd call him on his rude behavior. Most evenings I eat at my desk, he continued, but since I need to give you a key to my house and a more complete list of what I need done, I thought it might be more pleasant to do it at the sandwich shop. Pleasant? I raised an eyebrow at his comment and saw him flinch at the realization of what he'd said. Ms. Klein, I'm not deliberately trying to be rude, obtuse, or inconsiderate. I'm simply a man who is in over his head during the busiest time of year for my business. Please accept my apologies if I've offended you in any way. My husband had committed adultery and left me for another woman. He destroyed my trust in everyone, save a few close friends. He'd shaken my faith in myself. I tended to view the world differently now and had painted its landscape with dark, brooding colors. Perhaps I was trying to paint Ben Anders with the same brush. He'd done nothing other than make a few remarks that I perceived incorrectly. I'd let Samuel's betrayal hijack common sense. And now I was the one who owed my client an apology. Apology accepted, Mr. Anders, I said. And please accept mine as well. I'm afraid I'm venturing into new territory. Rather than embrace it, I'm reacting poorly. He nodded and smiled. On one condition, though, you must call me Ben. I bit my lip nervously as I contemplated this new twist. When anyone calls me Mr. Anders, I think they're talking to my father, who is 90 and lives in a retirement home in Florida. His brows drew together in a pleading expression. What harm could it do? All right, but you have to call me Lucy. Heaven forbid I should be mistaken for my mother-in-law. The shrewish woman told everyone at our wedding reception that Samuel had married beneath him and that she didn't expect the marriage to last. At times, I too marveled that we lasted 27 years. Now, about Rocky's, he asked. Rocky's lived up to its reputation of serving the best club sandwich in the town. Savoring the sandwich and onion rings, I listened intently as my new client went over my assignment. By the time I swallowed the last bite, I knew more about his schedule, his house, and his automobile than I knew about my best friends. I'm really sorry it's such a long list, he apologized. It wasn't. I'd quickly calculated that along with my other regular clients, his list would take me about 4 weeks to complete. This job would help me finalize the payments on my attorney's fees and get me headed back down the road to financial stability. Everything just fell apart after my wife died, he said, looking at his plate. Until my sister recommended you, I had no idea what I was going to do. Your wife must have been the ultimate housewife, I said. Ben choked on his water. Trish? Oh, heavens, no. She hated housework and could burn water trying to boil eggs. But she was a top-notch attorney, and unlike me, she knew where to find good help. So why didn't I keep her helpers? He finished the sentence for me. He had a housekeeper who handled everything, just like you're going to do. But after Trish died, Suzanne decided to move to Florida to be with her daughter and grandchildren. I was too busy to find someone else. A sad expression darkened his face. We never had children. We couldn't. And I was always so busy every tax season. Suddenly, I had a great deal of sympathy for this man. Life had dealt us both a heavy blow, and both of us were trying our best to deal with it. However, I was a businesswoman now, and developing any sort of feelings for a client was a one-way street to failure. I really hate to rush off, but I have another appointment. I pushed away from the table, grabbing my purse and the manila envelope containing Ben's list and house key. I'll get started tomorrow. It wasn't lying if you counted curling up on the sofa with a DVD of the latest movie release as an appointment, was it? I had to get out of that restaurant before my nurturing personality took over, and I started patting Ben Anders on the hand, assuring him that everything would be all right. Walking into my kitchen from the attached garage, my phone rang. A glance at the caller ID showed it was Cheryl. So how'd it go with the tax man? She quipped. It's unbelievable how much work that man has for me. And that's a problem? Well, I hesitated briefly. Lucy, what's the matter? He didn't try anything funny, did he? Because if he did, I'll get my cousin Ralph to straighten him out. Oh, no, Cheryl, he didn't try anything funny. It's just, well, I feel so sorry for that poor man. That poor man is worth a bundle, so don't feel too bad for him, she replied in a huff. I know, not poor in the financial sense. I mean, he's overworked, and since his wife died, I remembered my earlier annoyance. Why didn't you tell me he wasn't married? I thought I was going to work for his wife, and then I find out he's a widower, and he practically accused me of sexual discrimination right before he asked me to meet him for dinner, and, whoa, you're babbling. He accused you of sexual discrimination? And better yet, he asked you to dinner? I rubbed a spot between my eyes, trying to ward off the headache that threatened to start. I've never provided services for a man before. Oh, geez, that sounds like I'm running a sex-for-hire racket, doesn't it? I heard Cheryl giggling on the other end of the line. Anyway, we didn't really get off to a good start, but I recovered and we got everything set up. Over dinner? Where did he take you? It wasn't a date. It was just more convenient for me to meet him at a sandwich place near his office. Anyway, why didn't you tell me he wasn't married? I thought you knew, she said. His wife's death was all over the papers. I rifled through my memory and drew a blank until the name Tricia Anders suddenly popped into focus. Oh my God, the attorney who was killed by her client's husband was Ben's wife. The case had indeed dominated the local news for weeks. Tricia Anders was representing a woman whose husband had a history of domestic violence. When the court served him with divorce papers, he blamed his wife's attorney for putting ideas into her head and ambushed her in the parking lot of her office before leading the police on a 2-week manhunt. A team of officers finally cornered him in a remote cabin where he blew his brains out as the police closed in on him. One man left two people widowed, and the incident left our community shaken to its roots. One and the same. So now you're on a first name basis with him? A professional first name basis, I insisted, receiving another call. Gotta run, Cheryl. Lee's calling, I said, tapping a button to take the other call. After a half-hour chat with my son, I took a long bubble bath, put on my pajamas, and cozied up on the sofa. James Bond filled the screen, swilling shaken martinis while wooing a beautiful spy. By the time he'd saved the world, I was yawning and ready for bed. The next morning, I began tackling Ben's list. By noon, I'd found him a weekly housekeeper, a launderer that would pick up and deliver his suits, and a lawn service to tackle his crabgrass problem. 2 days later, I met with a plumber at Ben's home to fix the leak under the kitchen sink, so he wouldn't have to keep a galvanized bucket underneath catching the drips. The day after that, I rescheduled his dentist and annual physical exam appointments to after tax season. My first week as Ben's wife ended on a positive note, with a quarter of his list crossed off and a plan of attack for the other duties. The second week, however, began on an awkward note when I realized that shopping was going to answer the question of boxers or briefs, a question I didn't know I had, and one I wasn't sure I wanted to know. 3 packages of white boxer shorts informed me. At least his new housekeeper wouldn't repeat his mistake and wash them with a red t-shirt. The awkwardness, however, reached an all-time high the next day when I phoned Ben to ask if he'd like me to call an exterminator to handle the ants marching across his patio, perilously close to his kitchen door. "What would I do without you?" he asked. "What indeed?" After giving me the okay to call a pest company, Ben dropped a major bomb. The State Society of CPAs is hosting its annual dinner on Saturday night, and I'd like you to accompany me. Finding a plumber was fine. Buying his underwear was a stretch. But okay. Going to dinner with him was out of the question. "It's at the Providence Club," he continued, without waiting for my answer. I'd always dreamed of dining there, but the prices were way out of my league. "If you like to dance, Tuxedo Junction will be playing big band era music." Could he read my mind and know everything that would make an evening perfect for me? "I know it's outside the scope of your normal services, but I'd really like an escort for the evening so my colleagues' wives will stop trying to fix me up with blind dates." He had created a dream come true date and then played the sympathy card. "Even if I was free Saturday night," I lied, "it's not a good idea for me to mix business and pleasure. I've explained that to you before. I can assure you there will be nothing pleasant at all about this dinner. It will open with a tedious speech from the president of the society, followed by a series of awards, which are presented to the same people each year in rotation while everyone politely applauds. Next, the self-serving vice president will pat himself on the back and volunteer to take the position for another year so he can go to the national conference in Orlando, take his family, and claim the whole trip as a business deduction. So why do you go if it's so awful? And why do you want to drag me along with you? I thought. I heard a distinct sigh on the other end of the connection. It's expected of me. All the good little CPAs make an appearance and clap at the appropriate times. We eat the rubber chicken dinner, then go home and ask ourselves why we entered such a boring and stressful profession in the first place. Being the poster child for expected behavior, I certainly understood where he was coming from. I'd been expected to marry the right man, to be the proper wife and mother, and to be perfect in every way. That expectation hadn't run the other way, however, and that's what has led me to this very unsettling position of answering Ben's question. Having someone there to talk with about something other than assets, liabilities, and the new changes in tax law would make it enjoyable. Why not? It was only dinner, and we'd already covered that territory quite successfully at the sandwich shop. Okay, I agreed, shutting out the little voice that kept telling me what a bad idea it was. I'll pick you up at 6:30. Okay, I'll just start that whole sentence over. But this time it sounded like one of relief. I'll pick you up at 6:30 on Saturday. What if I meet you there at 6:45? If the situation became too awkward, I wanted to be able to walk away and get home on my own. After a moment's hesitation, Ben agreed. I'll wait for you in the lobby so you won't have to search for me in the ballroom. And do you have a cocktail dress? Cocktail dress? This was beginning to sound like more of a shindig than I'd imagined. They were accountants, after all, known for their attention to detail at the expense of everything else. Well, maybe I could borrow one from a friend or find something at a consignment shop. Picking up on my hesitation, Ben said, "Don't go to any bother, Lucy. Some of the women wear them, but some don't. I just know how you women like to know what everyone else is wearing." You women, indeed. I'd planned on wearing my good black dress, the one my mother always called a three C's dress because it was suitable for church, cocktails, and the cemetery, but I'd wear a cocktail dress one way or another. I eased my 10-year-old VW Beetle into the Providence Club's parking lot at 7:40 and realized quickly it was the only domestic car there. If my guess was correct, it was also the oldest car there, not counting the vintage Rolls parked beside a red Porsche. I also noticed immediately that the only parking option was valet. I'd stretched my budget on the blue beaded dress after finding the consignment shop lacking. Thankfully, my wobbly high heels suited the dress. Cheryl loaned me an evening purse and wrap to complete the outfit. A few dollars to tip the valet wouldn't be a problem. The attendant held out his hand and assisted me from my car. When I opened my purse to dig out a few bills. He cleared his throat to get my attention. "Mr. Anders has taken care of your parking, ma'am." "Oh," I replied weakly, my mouth frozen in an O shape, as I dropped my keys into his outstretched hand and then carefully entered the lobby of the stately building. "Lucy, you made it," Ben called to me from his position on a burgundy leather sofa, rising to his full height. I saw that he was in a tuxedo. Instantly, the extra mile I'd gone to find a cocktail dress had paid off. He was freshly shaved, and I caught a whiff of his cologne, sophisticated and masculine without being overpowering. He even had his hair cut for the occasion. My initial observation had been right. He was a knockout, but he was my client. I needed to remember that. The chicken was rubbery, just as he'd predicted, and the president's speech was as boring as I'd anticipated it to be. But being with Ben overshadowed all of that. After the speeches were over and the tables had been cleared, the band began to set up. Ben asked if I'd like to get a breath of fresh air. Eden Beach's nights were balmy, even at this time of year, and we were able to step outside into a courtyard dotted with palm trees and wrought iron benches. Twinkling white lights twisted among the tree branches, lending the entire area a magical touch. Strolling around the flagstone path, we breathed in the salty fragrance from the ocean a few blocks away. "May I ask you a question, Ben?" He nodded, and I continued. "If being a CPA makes you so unhappy, why do you do it? Did you know it was going to be like this when you went into the field? The long hours at tax time, the deadlines, the reams and reams of paperwork." A faraway look filled his eyes. "It was expected of me. My father was a CPA. He wanted me to follow in his footsteps and work for him. I actually inherited the firm from him when he died." "It sounds more like he demanded it from you," I said, immediately sorry for the words and expecting an angry response from Ben. He stopped and motioned for me to sit on one of the benches. "You're absolutely correct. He demanded it, but it sounds more polite in conversation to say it was expected." "What did you want to do with your life?" I asked softly, hoping he'd confide in me. He leaned over and propped his elbows on his knees, staring at the ground beneath the bench. "I wanted to be a math professor. I always loved numbers, but my father convinced me there was no money in teaching and that with accounting I could still play with numbers and charge people $150 an hour to do it." I let the words trail off, remembering how rude it was to discuss salaries. He was right about teaching, but I've never been big on material things. "Anyway," he said, sitting up straight and adjusting his bow tie, "I never would have met my wife if I'd gone to the teacher's college instead of Vanderbilt. And if I didn't have the firm, I'd never have met you." My mouth formed another O. Ben shifted uncomfortably beside me as the first strains of music drifted outside. "Shall we?" he asked, standing and offering his hand. We walked back inside. As soon as I saw couples on the dance floor, their arms around each other, I knew I was in too deep. "You know, I really need to get home and finish up some paperwork," I said, whirling away from the ballroom entrance. "It's been nice, really nice, the nicest evening I've had in a long time, but I need to go." His shoulders slumped and a look of disappointment replaced his smile. "I'll walk you to your car," he said, without emotion. "I'll be by Monday morning to pick up your car and take it to the shop," I said as I slid behind the wheel. "You can borrow my car if you like." He surveyed the Beetle from front to back and chuckled. "I don't think I could get one leg in there. I'll get Doug to pick me up, and I'll leave the keys on the kitchen counter. The dealership will be expecting you. I arrived to an empty house on Monday morning, my emotions waffling between relief and discouragement. I'd enjoyed dinner with him, perhaps a little too much. I could get used to being treated like a lady, and I'd hoped to have a few words with him to apologize for my hasty retreat. As I drove his Volvo to the dealership for an oil change and tire rotation, I wondered if Samuel's new wife minded being ignored during football season or waiting until movies were released on DVD because he didn't like going to the theater. Had she learned to cook his favorite foods, or did they dine out frequently? Then again, perhaps he treated her differently. Most people took much better care of a new car than they did of their old clunker. Maybe it was that way with wives. The new one had doors open for her. The old clunker was left to forge a new life for herself. From what I'd seen of Ben, I felt certain that Tricia Anders had been a very lucky woman indeed. I'd be willing to bet that he more than made up for his long hours during tax season with vacations together and nights on the town, nights like the dinner last Saturday. The car behind me honked, and I realized I'd wandered off in a daydream and wasn't paying attention. Okay, enough of this. No more mixing business and pleasure and letting it distract me from my job. That was my new credo, and I stuck to it until Wednesday, when I dropped by his office to deliver several quotes for having his house re-roofed. "Would you have dinner with me again Saturday night?" he asked, thumbing through the estimate forms. "Another dull, boring CPA meeting?" "As a matter of fact, no," he replied smoothly, without lifting his gaze from the papers. "I came across my season tickets to the symphony. They're playing Saturday, and I thought, well, I wondered if you might enjoy having dinner and an evening of Broadway music." Dear heavens, he was asking me on a date. I found it both flattering and distressing. My feminine side wanted to say yes and enjoy an evening out with a handsome man. But the newly discovered business tycoon inside me screamed for me to decline and then cancel our contract so I wouldn't have to see him again. Of course, Eden Beach wasn't a very large town, and there was always the possibility that I'd run into him. I had to consider the possible repercussions, too. Word of mouth worked both ways. "I gather from your silence that the answer's no." He spoke without a hint of anger, but with just a note of quiet resignation in his voice. I squirmed in my chair and swallowed hard. "I thought you had to work 15 hours a day, 6 days a week during tax season. Won't you fall behind?" "I've let Doug take over more of the accounts. He and his wife are expecting their first baby this fall, so the extra money will help them," he explained. "But thanks for your concern. So would you like to go?" He made eye contact with me and refused to break it. "I should say no. I should run away from you as fast as I can because I know better. You're a client, and going out on a date with you is wrong on every level." I took a deep breath and carefully considered my next words. "I should say no because I'm afraid I'll cross that line between personal and professional, and I won't be able to turn around and cross back over." "I could give you the same argument," he said, rising from his chair and walking to the side of his desk. He struck a casual pose, one hip against the dark mahogany wood. "And in my case, I could add that I haven't been out with a woman since Trish died. At first, it was for the obvious reasons. Then I told myself I couldn't find anybody who was like her. Finally, about 2 or 3 years ago, I accepted that it was because I was just plain scared. Scared of loving and losing again. It hurt so much. Besides, times have changed. Women have changed, and I'm not sure what women want anymore. Do I kiss her on the first date? Does she expect me to pay for everything, or am I going to insult her if I don't let her pay her own way? Open the door or not? And dear God, I don't even want to think about sex. At the mention of sex, a wave of crimson rushed up his neck and colored his cheeks. He glanced at the floor, toeing the carpet with his shoe. What did I have to lose? Nothing except maybe my self-respect and his and his sister's business. My stomach lurched at the possibility. But maybe I would gain something instead. Maybe I'd gain back some of the self-confidence I'd lost when Samuel left. I had feelings for Ben, just blossoming feelings to be sure, but how would I ever know if we could develop a real relationship unless I tried? I don't kiss on the first date. I'll pay my own way if you like, or if it will make you more comfortable, you can pay. I always look at the prices on the menu, and my mother taught me to be considerate of other folks' finances. I like when a man opens the door for me, and well, the last thing, I blushed more deeply than he had. Right, he said, his lips compressed into a straight line. Our unspoken agreement kept sex out of the equation, at least for now. Decades had passed since I'd last heard a symphonic orchestra, and I'd forgotten how exhilarating the experience could be. Afterwards, over a dinner of chicken cordon bleu with steamed asparagus and baby carrots, Ben and I allowed the discussion to wander over a wide variety of topics. When he asked about my divorce, I replied candidly, but without bitterness, I cannot understand why a man my age would trade in a woman like you for someone half his age. It's like getting a new computer and you have to reinstall all the software and get used to a new keyboard. I chuckled at his analogy, imagining Samuel growing frustrated over a woman who didn't know how to bake his favorite biscuits or fold his socks just like he wanted. Our marriage had been a give and take. I gave, he took. I couldn't see a woman of today tolerating such a one-sided relationship. Would I even tolerate it given another chance at marriage? Dessert? The waiter asked, clearing our plates, or cleaning them. No, clearing them. I couldn't see that very good. I really shouldn't, I said, remembering Mama's advice about not wearing out your welcome on a date. Why not? Surely you're not watching your weight because there's nothing to watch. You have a terrific figure. I blushed, the waiter grinned, and Ben removed the glasses and polished the lenses with his napkin. He removed his glasses, I should have said. How about we share, he suggested. Once his spectacles were back on his face, the creme brulee is especially good here. Our one creme brulee and two spoons it is. The waiter rushed off to the kitchen with our order. Sharing bites of the sugary dessert progressed from fun to intimate when our hands brushed and a spark of electricity zigzagged up my arm and straight to my heart. On the drive home, I remembered my speech to him earlier in the week. This wasn't going to work. I needed to call a halt to it as soon as he dropped me off at my house. He insisted on walking me to my front door. I was petrified he'd try to kiss me despite my earlier statement. I jabbed my house key into the lock and twisted the doorknob. Safety was mere feet away. I stepped into the doorway, my hands braced on either side of the opening. It was nice, really nice. The nicest evening you've had in a long time, right? Discouragement clouded his face and his shoulders slumped. I was really hoping it would be more than nice tonight because it was for me. I froze in place as he continued. I'll be honest, Lucy, I wasn't looking for any sort of relationship when I hired you, But as I've been around you, I've learned what a wonderful person you are. You're attractive and bright, and when you allow yourself to strip away that polite veneer you wear so well, you're funny and passionate about the people and causes you believe in. His words had me floored. I still viewed myself as mousy little Lucy Klein, cast-off wife and empty nester, but this wealthy and attractive man thought otherwise. It was more than nice, Ben. It was perfect, I admitted, and that's why I can't see you anymore. I closed the heavy oak door in his face and slid the deadbolt in its track, locking him out of my physical space, but not succeeding at locking him out of my thoughts. On Monday morning, I prepared a final invoice and mailed it. On Tuesday afternoon, his name and number popped up on my caller ID. I let the call roll to the answering machine. I listened as he thanked me for the fine work I'd done and asked why I'd shut the door in his face. He'd said it himself, fear of caring for someone and then having that person drop out of your life, leaving you behind to nurse the wounds. On Thursday, a delivery boy stood at my door with a large bouquet of stargazer lilies, a bouquet I refused and told the delivery boy to give to his girlfriend or mother. Surely, as I refused his romantic overtures, Ben would eventually give up. Cheryl and I met for Sunday brunch at our favorite beachside cafe. "What on earth is wrong with you?" she asked when she joined me at the table. "You look like you did after Samuel left. Oh my God, is he causing you trouble?" I assured her he wasn't. It was inevitable, however, that she'd ask about the work I'd done for Ben. "Did he put the moves on you? 'Cause if he did, I'll call your cousin Ralph. I know." Shaking my head, I assured her that he hadn't tried anything funny. My throat closed as I unsuccessfully tried to blink back the tears. "I don't understand," she said with a puzzled look. 4 cups of coffee and an order of eggs, Benedict. Later, she knew the whole story. "Oh, honey, I know how Samuel hurt you. I was there, remember? But Ben seems like a good guy. The real deal. It's obvious you care about him or you wouldn't have lost 7 nights of sleep over him." 8, I corrected, pulling at a tissue from my purse to wipe my eyes. "Give him another chance, sweetie. Call him tomorrow at his office and see if you can meet him. Meet on a neutral ground just to talk." "I'll think about it," I promised her when she reminded me again in the cafe parking lot. "Don't think about it, do it," she admonished. As soon as I walked into the house, I saw the answering machine light blinking, indicating I had 3 messages. His voice sounded from the device asking why I'd refused the flowers. "Tomorrow I'd call him. Tomorrow." Before I could listen to the next message, which I feared was from him as well, my doorbell rang. I peeped through the viewfinder and was surprised to see an Eden Beach Water Service delivery man. I dealt with the company as part of Ben's job, and this appearance on my front porch puzzled me. I didn't buy bottled water. Was there a problem with Ben's service? I yanked open the door. When the man turned to face me, I discovered that I'd been tricked. It wasn't a delivery man at all, but Ben wearing a jacket and cap. My first inclination was to shut the door in his face again, but I promised Cheryl I'd talk to him. Now was as good a time as any. "Very sneaky," I said, "and very out of character for you. But it worked, didn't it?" He grinned and my stomach fluttered. "I came over to ask you if you'd consider..." "No, Ben, I don't think I should work for you anymore." His expression became serious. "I don't want to hire a wife, Lucy." "Oh?" Now my expression matched his. "I was thinking more along the lines of marrying one and wondered if you might know a woman who was interested in investigating the position." Okay, that's the end of that story, and that's going to do it for this romance program. Thank you so much for listening. As always, this has been Volunteer Jeannie Host for Sun Sounds. Have a great week, and take care. Bye-bye.